Have you enjoyed listening to the CrowdPaw Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some CrowdPaw merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to CrowdPaw.org/merch, CrowdPaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your CrowdPaw look.
Yeah, I probably have always loved the challenge, and I'm a get under the hood of the car and try to figure it out kind of girl. And always, like, there's nothing, there is an answer or a solution, even if it's we explored all the things and this thing can't be fixed. But there, we got to go there and experience it. And so I've just always been that person that I want to help figure it out or to connect the dots.
Turn this up. Your professional development is one of the keys to your career success. When you combine your desire to grow with actionable steps, your journey to success becomes an incredible reality.
Hi, I'm Paul Farranby, aka CrowdPaw, and welcome to CrowdPaw Leadership, where we learn how to become the most incredible versions of ourselves by learning from each other. First off, if you're just listening to this episode, you can also watch it on YouTube. Regardless of if you're listening or watching this episode, thank you so much for your support. So today I have the honor of having Lori Holt on the show. She brings over 20 years of executive expertise, apparently I cannot talk right now, and change-making leadership. She has a proven track record in Fortune 100 companies, startups, and nonprofit businesses. Lori is dedicated to guiding businesses towards sustainable growth, while creating capacity, empowering executives to reach their full potential. So that was a little bit about you, Lori, but how about you introduce yourself the way you would do it?
Well, I mean, that seems to capture it all. Like, I don't know even what's left to say. But thank you. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing, Paul. And thank you for having me here to share my story. As Paul indicated, I am a former executive of Fortune 100, Fortune 20 executive, private equity.
Fortune 20. Wow.
Well, it was actually Fortune 15, like if we're counting. So let me just.
Okay.
Fortune
15.
That's right.
I love it.
I also did private equity and healthcare. And then I spent some time in nonprofit work. This was all a part of a vision. As crazy as this seems, I had a vision board when I was about 22, right after I graduated from college and had my first gig. And I kind of laid out kind of, if the world were mine, here's what I would do. And so I started out earlier in my career as an internal auditor. And that thing just led to another thing. You know, I always thought that internal audit would give me the cheat code to begin to understand organizations and people and where the problems were. And it did just that. So I did that twice. Really? In two companies, I started out internal audit and then navigated my career from there. But really, you know, I give all the credit to Cardinal Health. I spent over 18, 19 years there, and they really allowed me to grow and morph into this executive that I have become. I had great sponsorship, great mentorship, and just an all-out great company with lots of growth that allowed me to expand. And from there, after that, I was like, you know what? The company had started to grow significantly, but change, as you can imagine. You know, you aren't who you are at 20 that you were at year zero, year one. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm kind of structured around the concept of I can be good, but can I be good somewhere else? And so I got into this space where I wanted to prove that I could be good somewhere else. So I left Cardinal, went to Cigna. I spent a short while there for no other reason than the pandemic hit. You know, healthcare was hard then. And I was the COO for specialty distribution business. And anybody who knows that business, we were the business who handled a lot of the distribution of the drugs that covered or were framed to cover COVID. You know, kind of, we didn't know what fixed COVID at that point in time, but we were grabbing for straws. And so we were a exclusive distributor of a particular drug that helped kind of with the diagnosis of COVID and get through that. And then I was recruited by a colleague of mine that I worked with at Cardinal to go into private equity. often worked that business from a distribution side. That also was fun, but I was really then at that point, like, you know what? I want to try something different. Let me go do this nonprofit thing. I was done with healthcare. No other reason. And it's just hard, right? I mean, as a little girl, I wanted to be a physician, but I just realized the pain and suffering of not only the patient or the individual, but the families that it impacted. Goodness. And so, you know, healthcare during that phase was just tough emotionally. And so I decided to, I was sought out for a COO role for the Executive Leadership Council that focused on the advancement of African Americans in corporate America and on boards. And I just thought, what better way than to take all of this experience that I had in support into an organization that not only supported people that looked like me, but worked with people who didn't look like me to really understand the importance of sharing in a vision of creating space and opportunity for Black and brown people to experience and have great experiences in corporate America and on corporate boards. But also it's created a sense of community for the members of the Executive Leadership Council. So that was super fun. You know, I paused for a second because I also had this dream or vision that I wanted to, whatever I did earlier in my career through, at that time, 55 was what the goal was, but it was to take all of the experiences that I had built up in my professional toolkit, is what I would call it, and turn that into something, a business of some sort, creating some profit, but really pouring into people who couldn't afford talent, who had the kind of experience that I had working in the fortunes and working in private equity and nonprofit. And so I decided to exit my professional, that corporate career, and start an organization or a business of my own. And so now I am the founder and CEO of Novell & Associates. Novell is kind of meaning a new way of doing something, kind of like a novel idea, but a new way of doing something. And so I help small to mid-sized companies in their growth phase who have gotten to a certain place, but know that something has to change. What got them here won't get them where they really want to go. Be that an exit, be that they want to grow exponentially, but nonetheless, they can't keep doing what they're doing, either through people, process, or technology. Something has to change. So I go in and start with strategy at the heartbeat and understand what the strategy is, where there's a gap to where you want to go, and then where are your holes or opportunities within your business to dial things up to get to where you want to go. That is a lot of passion. So I do that in the small to mid-sized for-profit space and for nonprofit space. I've been in business now a little over a year. We had a successful year, although I can tell you that the transition from corporate America and being an employee to being a business owner has been quite the journey this year, but all fun stuff. That's the long and short.
Yeah, no, I love how you unpack that. It sounds like you've done a little bit of everything, from working in the fortunes to the private equity to nonprofit to now leading your own business. But I want to hone in on like the last thing you talk about, like really this transition into owning your own business, I guess. Were there things that surprised you about being a business owner versus working for a company, or maybe some things that were a little bit different, or I guess just open it up. Like, what were some things that were you didn't expect?
I think, you know, the best way I would say it, because I've always been a part of organizations, I never worked in a space that was get up every day and do the same thing over and over. Everything I did was like, okay, what's today going to be? What's this acquisition going to bring us? What's this customer integration? Or we want to do something new and different. I was always hired to be a disruptor. And so I think the things, I lay that as the foundation, because I think the thing that surprised me the most is the level of insecurity that I kept letting creep in. Like, oh my God, can I do this? Where's the next client coming from? And just continuously pitching, and it's not coming. But knowing in the back of my mind that things take time. Like, I know the corporate cycle. I know the sales cycle. Like, I know it. And like, I know it after 30 years of work experience. I know what that is. But for some reason, when it's the spotlight's on you, it's different or it feels different. It has taken me the full loop of the year to kind of like, you got this. Like, you know, My husband and I laugh all the time. I'm like, yeah, I applied for another job today. He's like, what's the job? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't feel like I need to have a job. Like, he was like, would you stop it? Like, just do this. And so I had to continuously remind myself to let go of this notion of fear and not gonna make it and oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. But the thing that reminded me, like, when I released the actual fear of it and tried to put some association to the fear, like, why am I experiencing this? What I realized is that's what fueled me throughout my corporate career, because it was always something new and unknown. So I would get like this curtain fright, like, you know, like, the audience is out there. Oh my God, I got to perform. Am I going to get my line? But that's what fuels me, is I like the unknown. I like, you know, if you read my LinkedIn bio, it talks about being like a paratrooper and solving the unknown, and kind of that is what I thrive in. And so it's like somebody opens the curtain, like, here you go. Here's a client or a client. And it's like, okay. And then my brain just starts clicking. It's like, it just, I can quickly see what needs to be done. The questions come to me. So, I got you.
Yeah. Okay, there's kind of the disruption a little bit, but I got you.
And so once I was able to, I think what I realized about myself when I kind of take an index back over the years is I like this unwind, oh my God, free fall, what's gonna happen? And then it just all kind of starts coming together and the domino pieces start to fit. So I thought maybe entrepreneur were like, you do this and then you do this and then you do this. And yeah, there's some ups and downs on revenue, you know, cycle and when it's gonna come. But I just didn't expect this production of feelings like I had in corporate America under, I guess, what I would call the protection of a normal pay cycle, a normal all this. But the feelings are real and it doesn't make it different because you're doing something different. It was kind of like my signal to myself that I was okay, because I was feeling that same feeling and it was all going to come together. And every time I pitched it, people like resonated with it. They either had to go find budget. Oh my God, I never thought about it. So they had to sit in it for a second. But most of the people that I've pitched to have come back around to say, okay, now I'm ready. Let's do a thing. So, you know, I can't say unknown. I kind of lowered it from either doing acquisitions or acquisitions of businesses or implementation of customers, the normal cycle. Like, we have a conversation, you wait. You put a proposal together, you wait. You start a thing and you wait. So all that felt familiar to me. I just think... Okay. My fear, like that fear boiling up and kind of calming down and settling.
Okay. What I'm hearing is maybe some aspects of an imposter syndrome, because you just didn't really, at least, I don't know if you're, if that's something that maybe that's not the right word.
We can be transparent, Paul, right? I think it's the sting of the statement, but I think it's true. I think I don't do imposter. Like, I talk about, like, I give presentations on imposter syndrome. But I think if I were to be honest, to call a thing, that's what it is.
Isn't?
Yeah.
So.
No, I think it's interesting because what I genuinely believe is that every one of us who are high achievers have some aspect of imposter syndrome, because it often happens when we're doing something new or novel. And so I think the only people, if there's anyone, because I feel like everyone has some sort of imposter syndrome, but the only people that don't have any imposter syndrome are people that are truly not doing anything. Everything is the same, or they're not trying anything new, or they're just doing nothing.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So I think with that, because I actually had a recent conversation, I was able to do like a roundtable discussion at a conference with some grad students and undergrads about imposter syndrome and just to answer their questions and just talk about their experiences with it. And the one thing I told them, whether or not, I don't know if this was comforting to them or maybe it was an eye opener, was that I don't really think you really ever get rid of imposter syndrome. I think you learn how to manage it better just by acknowledging it. I think there's a danger in trying to just push the feelings down and say that everything's good. And then when you don't acknowledge things, it just kind of fester and it can be underlying and you're not able to be as successful.
I think while you're double clicking on something that probably hasn't or no, or I haven't read about it yet, I'm unpacking imposter syndrome, right? There's a lot of this fake it till you make it kind of thing. Yeah. And I think until you said it in this moment, I think there's categories of imposter syndrome in which bucket you fall into. And so I think my reaction to it was like, I'm not faking it. Like, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, yeah. But I do think it's the fear of not. That is the, if I had to label what space I'm in, it's just like, what if I don't? Like, I'm going to let people down. And oh my God. And like, you know, and nobody's even checking for me. Like, you know, like, I'm nothing has changed except for the space I'm doing the work. But I think it's that fear of not making it, right? And so I think it resonates because it's a familiar feeling that I've experienced every time I've been thrown into a new role. I have not ever been the traditional vertical functional leader. Like, I've always, like, if I went through my experiences, or if anybody looks, like, you know, I started out in accounting and finance, I pivoted to operations, I've been in supply chain, you know, like, it's never been like, oh, I did 20 years and was a 20-year CPA, like, nope, did that, and then I was like, oh, well, that's not really coming done. And I just kept expanding kind of the experience, which has allowed me to get into a lot of the spaces that I've played.
No, that's really good. And I really appreciate your transparency about even talking through like just the last year as a business owner. I think a lot of times when it's kind of, it's glorified to work for yourself, quit your 9-to-5. But I think it's also funny because you're like, just quit your 9-to-5. But then if you're a business owner, you end up working a lot more. I mean, you have more control about it, but then everything is on you, like you said. It's not like this protection that you have. And I think that's not something people always talk about. They talk about the good things. They don't talk about the big picture. Like, at the end of the day, the business is successful because of you.
It's funny that you say that because, you know, over the summer, I was committed to this 5-mile walk in the mornings to kind of clear my mind, get ready. Like, what are my intentions for today? What do I need to get done? Because you're right. Like, you can plan your whole entire day. Nobody's coming to check for you but you. I have a great circle of friends and associates who will call and check, like, girl, how's it going? And I'm like, girl, no. And they're like, you don't want this life. You don't want corporate. I'm like, you don't want this life. Like, this is crazy. Like, like, and so it was, it's just been, to your point, I think it is glorified because you're not having to report for duty. But I go to sleep with my business thoughts. I wake up thinking about I'm in the shower, like thinking I'm eating my, like, I can't escape it. There is no 9-to-5. Like, I'm going to get the check out. Like, because the bonus, the every engagement, like, I don't get called in after the deal is signed. Like, I'm creating a deal, I'm working the deal. And then, like, where most people get to go work on the next deal, I'm now activating the project. But then, oh, I'm working on this deal because you're always trying to seed where the money's coming from, where the revenue's coming from, and, you know, trying to create efficiencies in your work so you're not starting everything over the first time, even though you have a different client.
Are you wondering what's next? Has everything you tried failed? Or maybe you just feel stuck? Then coaching may be right for you. The coaching relationship is a relationship totally centered on you. So what are you waiting for? Go to incredipaul.org/coaching so I can help you become the most incredible version of yourself.
And so there's this all ever-evolving kind of morphing thing that's going on. And then you're trying to do R&D in the business, too. You're revamping, like, where do I want to focus? Do I want to do that? You know, it's just this. I almost can think about what came to me as we were having this conversation was that it might not be new anymore, but the fear in Vegas, how it's always changing, images. And that's what my head, that's what it feels like I'm always doing. It's always something new and people are always watching and what do I want to show next? And so it's fun. It's fun. I say all that, but it's something that scratches my itch. I'm very passionate. I'm a creator. I'm a studier by nature anyway. So anybody that's listening or watching that may have an interest, it's just a knack that either you like or you don't like. It's not good or bad. It's just, it's like running. Like either you like it or you don't. Like you can't wake up to say, I'm going to start running tomorrow. Like you hate running. It's not going to work. And so it is very fulfilling to me. It's scary. It's a lot of thrill. And I would just say the way I would parallel is it has replaced my childhood love for roller coasters because as a grown woman, I don't do roller coasters anymore. And my family will tell you, I go get the hot chocolate, the drinks, the pee, all the things. I'm the runner. But I am not getting strapped down on the roller coaster. But this is my version of an adult roller coaster, yes.
Yeah, I would argue that this roller coaster is more frightening than the other roller coaster.
Yes. I did the math the other day, Paul, and I was like, oh, shoot. You know, like I was talking to my wealth advisor, and, you know, she was like, we need to look at this. We need to look at that and think about your plan and because we needed that. And I was thinking, I looked at something, and it was like 67. I was like, 67, landed 53. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. I can't say grown anyway. Like, I knew that, but it was like, okay, Lord, you got to get serious. We got to figure this out. Like, and I have been, but you know the reality on it. But, yeah, it is scarier because I know no matter what that ride I get on at the amusement parks, it will stop. It will stop, and I'm going to get off at some place on the ride, either at the very end or malfunction somewhere. But this one, it just keeps like looping around.
Yeah, it just keeps going, spinning, turns, dead ends sometimes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I like that analogy of roller coasters. I think I'm going to use that and credit you for it. I'd be like, this is what Lori was saying. And I think it's a perfect description.
Like we can just play with that. Just I'll just go there, and then we can pivot to the next thought. But you know, like waiting when you pitch, it's like standing in line. Like you just keep like, Jesus, when is it gonna be my turn? Like 1, 2, 3, and it's like, no, we're closing down this line. Good book line.
yeah. It's like this ride is closed for the day. Go to this other one. Yes.
But it's fun. It's crazy. Fun, bro. It's a call. I think it's a calling. And my husband always talk about this. And, you know, it might not be forever, but it's what I'm doing now, and I'm enjoying it for now. I love what I'm doing. I love creating this thing that I'm creating.
That's really incredible. I love that so much. Well, I know like this is what you've been doing for the last year, but you've been doing so much in the leadership side of things prior to that. So I'm interested to know, like, what has been your journey to leadership? Is that something that you feel like you've always been passionate about or kind of grew over the years?
You know, I will say that I didn't start saying this until later in my career, but I really believe that I was placed here to teach. And teach the uncomfortable, right? Either by example, by being the person who has to go lead a thing, that there wasn't a finite, here's the path, here's how we're going to get there. I think about difficult conversations I've had and either feeling like I've been mistreated or speaking up for the voiceless, you know, things that weren't necessarily on my job description, but I felt because I had a voice and people respected me for the work that I did, but when I saw things, I wasn't shy about having the conversation or pushing the conversation on the thing. I didn't have to be right, but I didn't like people feeling like they were silenced. And so if I had to be the one that brought the conversation up on DE&I, or haven't you given any Black and brown person a chance or an opportunity in this space, or morally or ethically, you know, I don't like the way this is feeling. Yeah. And so my mom told me when I first started my professional career, and probably before that, but that's what I remember, is never let somebody else's problem become your problem. And I think I just always took that to heart. Like, I'm not giving her a bad day because of you, but I am happy to talk about it with you so we can work through it. Either I'm triggering something for you, or you want to talk to me about things.
Triggers are real sometimes.
Triggers are real, and they're traumas. And I think a lot of times people love their wed to their trauma. And so, you know, but I'm not her or it, so we're going to talk about it. And so I have just always loved a challenge. My mother would probably tell you that too. I probably have always loved a challenge, and I'm a get under the hood of the car and try to figure it out kind of girl. And always, like, there's nothing, there is an answer or a solution. Even if it's we explored all the things and this thing can't be fixed. But we got to go there and experience it. And so I've just always been that person that I want to help figure it out or to connect the dots. Even if it's not favorable or what we want it to be, I got to bring closure to it, because I don't want to keep picking at something that doesn't deserve to be picked at. So let's explore it. Let's wrestle it down to the ground, call a thing a thing, and then we can decide what to do with the thing. But to just act like it doesn't exist or it's over there and that, like, turn a blind eye, I don't operate well. What I have matured into, though, is everything isn't for me. Everything is not learning to fix. And so, and that took some growth, because you want things to be right, you want to get it fixed, you want to do your part, but everything isn't my calling. I'm not here for all the things. And so that was probably the revolving door that I had to keep going in and out of to get right and be okay with, and that I'm not a failure when I can't fix it, because that's just not my assignment. I have to leave it for somebody else.
That's really good perspective. Just really understanding that everything isn't for you, because I think sometimes it's easy to get a tunnel vision, or if you are a high achiever, like, you think that you can do everything and should do everything and be really successful at everything. But then this whole idea, I know John Maxwell talks about it a lot, about focusing on your strengths as opposed to trying to fix your weaknesses. That's right. Like, there are definitely weaknesses that if you are not good at listening to people, like, you need to work on that.
That's right.
And I don't think you can really be an effective leader without being a good listener. So that probably wasn't a good example of a weakness. But if you have weaknesses that aren't into, like, a certain level, like, you need to work on that to make sure they're at least on par with others.
Yeah.
But then you need to really focus and lean in on your strengths, and then surround yourself with a team or contractors, whatever it is, so that your weaknesses are not going to keep you from being successful.
Absolutely. Completely agree with that. Yeah. I think society, though, what is so interesting about that is because we are taught from very young children not to quit, not to give up, not to. And so it's this whole dichotomy of don't quit, don't give up, but deciding what's for you. It's just this thing I think that we wrestle with well into adulthood. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to call it failure. You can just decide that's not where I'm supposed to be spending my energy. And what I have learned over the years through relationships, through jobs, through people, is things can be challenging and present opportunities for growth. But nothing should feel forced.
That's good. Yeah.
Nothing. What's for you isn't, you don't shove it. Like, you know, you're not trying to stick a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the circle can be bigger or can be smaller than what you're trying to get through. And so you got to figure out what to shave off. Or how to expand and grow into a thing, but it's not supposed to be, it's not supposed to be forced or strife.
Yeah. No, I love these analogies that you keep throwing out.
It's so funny.
which I've definitely heard the square peg in the round hole, but even when you went further to say that if it's a little bit small, the circle's a little bit smaller, you expand to, or maybe you shave some stuff off. And that's not something I've heard before. But I guess talk to me more about that. What do you, maybe, do you have an example of like expanding or shaving stuff off? Maybe people you've worked with or from yourself?
Yeah, I think
I kind of put you on the spot.
You did. And I think about if I thought about projects, not necessarily about people. Let's kind of stay there for a second. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there is a playbook or a solution that you think you can implement or adopt to get after a thing. Mm-hmm. But just like I was saying earlier, I try to find repeatable processes to make life easier so that you can cycle through it faster. Everything needs to be assessed for the situation. And so sometimes you need to do more of this or less of that. Or sometimes you can omit this piece because these conditions have been met or the conditions haven't been met. And so you have to expand your due diligence or whatever the thing is to meet the moment or rise to the occasion.
I see.
People too, right? And I'll make this very simple. You could have a very similar task and you can, and I learned this when I was, as my daughter was growing up. I became a Lean Six Sigma master black belt. There's methodology that goes along with that, right?
Oh, wow, yeah.
What I give to my child to clean her room, like, here's what we're going to do to clean our room, versus you give that we need to clean up this process to functioning adults, is very different. For my child, you know, instead of us being frustrated with one another at a very young age of her not getting it right or doing it right, we cleaned up her room together after a moment of disappointment. And I took a picture after we cleaned it together. And that was the example going forward. Like, I never had to be disappointed. She never had to be frustrated. All she knew, she had to do these things. It needed to look like that picture. I'm good to go. The same goes for people. You have to understand, everybody's not the same. You manage and treat and lead people differently. Now, everybody won't rise to the occasion. Some will exceed your expectations, but you have to ebb and flow how that management style is approached based on the individual. That's what makes the world go round. That's what makes great teams great teams. And so that's what I'm saying as far as assessing the situation. And although they both may be round, you have to size it up and give it and put some context around it so that it's meeting the moment of the situation.
Well, that was really good. I think that's a really good leadership competency, really understanding your people, because when leaders try to treat everyone the same, that's when everyone gets frustrated, because you have people who don't need as much attention that feel over you're spending too much time with them, and people who aren't getting enough attention, like, I need more attention. Because we're all humans, we're all different. And I think that's why some people, when they are coming to leadership positions, I think it's going to be easy to just tell people what to do and just walk away. Or if you're a micromanager, you feel like you need to be on everyone, but you can't do that as a leader. You need to understand what drives your people, what motivates them, what fears them. Probably even more so to make sure that you're not doing things that are inhibiting them from success.
Absolutely. And I think to extend on that a little bit, I find that in the consulting work that I do, and even when I worked in corporate America, what I found is that people did a thing really good and they were rewarded for the thing that they did, the work, right? They did a thing really good and they were amazing and they got some award and got some bonus paid out on how they did it over there. And what they try to do is pick it up and just sit it down and then fuss at all the people for not getting it done. It's like, well, there are things and conditions that you probably aren't taking into consideration. And when people are uncomfortable or like they're resistant or they're tightening up with you, it's probably because either, you know, there's something that they need to say or share, but your show up doesn't invite them into the room to be right or wrong, or to at least go on the journey to decide what should we do. I think that's what, you know, that I love about the consulting piece that I do is it's about having the vision. You don't necessarily have to have the solution. You hire the right people or the right resources to help you imagine how to get there. Because there's always more than one way to get to a place. And you invite them in to give you things, because sometimes if you just settle in and open the room, you might find out things, you more often than not find out things that you didn't know. Just because it worked over there doesn't mean it's going to work here. And everybody knows you are hired because of what you did at ABCD, but it doesn't mean play for play, line by line. It means you have a vision and a pathway to get there, and you are open enough to consider the things that you don't know, or open enough that it needs to be different than the role that you did it before.
Yeah, being open as a leader is really key. And then really creating that psychological safety. And I think that has become bigger throughout the years. Like, what does psychological safety look like? Because I think sometimes with leadership, there's a tendency to think that if people aren't saying anything, that means all is good. But that might be complete opposite, that all is actually not good, that people don't feel comfortable to say things, either because they're new and they don't know and they have some past experiences of leadership that they have to work through. Or on the flip side, it could be when they have said things in the past, they've been shot down or they've been ignored. And so I think a lot of that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the only thing I was going to say is, but I think it's equally true on the inverse. I think often, and because I've gotten to work across the demographic makeup in different spaces and places, sometimes because of people, an organization has led in a certain way, the employees or people have worked under certain types of leadership. They are conditioned. You know, I said it earlier, people are led to their trauma. Sometimes people look for trauma. Like, it needs to feel familiar, and people not being open. And when you see the flip of it and say, you know, you say, for example, you've worked under a leader who's always said, don't ask questions, do what I say, do it. I don't need anybody in here, A, B, C, D. And then you have a visionary who is open, like, what do you think? And then what typically happens when people have become so accustomed to working in a certain environment, when the freedom is there, it's that old, I can't remember where I saw, but somewhere, this elephant with a chain hooked to the ankle.
Oh, yeah.
And when you unhook the ankle after years of conditioning, the elephant doesn't go anywhere. Because it's so used to believing that it's chained, it doesn't know how to function without the chain. And so, again, to anybody who's listening or watching, I think taking inventory of self, either as a leader or an observant of your team or being on the team, how are you showing up and how are you, what character role are you playing? Are you the elephant with the chain on it that's been freed up, but you don't know how to operate without the chain on your ankle? Or are you the manager who wants everybody under your thumb and you don't need anybody coming with some new ideas? Because either way, it's stifling the organization and one another and the people. So I think there is a lot of equally work that we could benefit from as individuals and as leaders and as team members. So what is your show up and how are you operating? And is it the healthiest for a thriving and growing organization?
That's a good question. Like, how are we showing up? And again, more great analogies with the elephant, the shade, and then the thumb as well. And I think that just comes down to emotional intelligence, like how you understand yourself and that introspection, the self-awareness, but also understanding others and your team. And there's definitely like there's no way we can unpack emotional intelligence in just one episode or even the rest of this episode.
Right, right.
But I think it's definitely those two things go hand in hand with leadership, because as humans, we are emotional creatures. Whether or not everyone is as emotionally expressive as others, but we all feel emotions. Some people are able to understand their emotions better than others, but emotional intelligence just comes down to, can you make your emotions work for you instead of against you? And can you understand how other people's emotions are working for or against them and get them towards the right direction?
Yeah, and I think something that we haven't talked about enough or that I see being discussed enough is, you know, that's true independent of anything that's going on in the world. Now, stuck on top of that, COVID, we had never experienced COVID. We were trapped in the house with our emotions and our feelings. And maybe you were trapped in the house with somebody you loved, didn't like, or you weren't trapped with anybody, and how that played, not for 6 weeks, not for 6 months, but basically roughly three years, right? Because then we had to return to some type of new way of being. And then you think about all the other levels, the political climate right now, socioeconomic with inflation and all the things that are going to us as a people, and the divisiveness that exists today, if no other time is more important than now, just for you to do an inventory and say, here's how I'm showing up, and either I'm great with it, or I'm not good, I don't know what to do about it, or I'm good and I'm going to do these things. But I just don't see space on time being spent to really unpack us under this thing. So unfortunately, I think that we have lots of work yet to do, and we just can't sweep it under the carpet like it didn't happen and it's not a thing, because I think this is the most pivotal time, and I'm sure there has been in history, so I won't say ever, but I think for where we are today, I think it's the most pivotal time whereby our personal and our professional lives are just all kind of jimmy jammed up together.
Oh yeah.
And not taking a pause is causing a whole bunch of stuff, which, you know, before we started recording, I was just like, you know, today was a day, and I kept saying, is it me? Let me. But it was like people that shouldn't have been weirded out by, because they're not in community together, or they don't work together. Like, it was weird. Everybody was on the same stuff today. But I think it's just a lot going on, and it's forcing people into a space that they've not had to play in. And again, we're not going to say, you know what, I'm having a really bad day personally and professionally, and I don't know what's going on. Like, nobody's saying that. They're just getting up trying to push through yet another day.
Yeah. And then a lot of that stuff that we're experiencing and we're feeling, we don't take the time to reflect on it. And then it causes us to react in certain ways to certain things that may have nothing to do with what we're experiencing. I think, like you said, now more than ever, we're more divided, and we're not having conversations. We're having arguments because everyone wants to be right, opposed to get to a solution that is better for everyone.
That's right.
And yeah, we definitely don't have time to even get into that. But
we can go so many places. I saw a clip yesterday on and I won't even bring up what it is, but people were in disagreement over a thing. And it was, well, that's what the media is telling us. And then the other person said, well, go Google it. And it was like, well, you can't trust Google. And the person was saying, well, you can't trust them. It was like this whole, that's what just made it so incredibly clear to me is that there's so much going on. So you just layer on, you're trying to go to work. That this had nothing. What I was watching was just two people that stopped each other on the street was having a conversation about a thing.
Oh, wow.
So imagine if you're in at work, you're trying to, who's getting the merit increase, who's getting the bonus. We got to blame each other. So I get more, you get less. You know, it's just this very interesting complexity of things that are going on in the world today.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. And we've covered a lot of it so far, but we're running out of time. But I want to make sure if there's anything we haven't talked about, either for yourself, professionally, personally, or just in general with leadership, that we can get to that as we wrap things up.
Yeah, I would just say that as you think about it, right, we're talking about all the stresses, but here's what I will give the bright line and what I'm focused on, because aside from the management consulting piece, I do emerging and executive coaching as well. And here's what I will always tell all of my clients or those who engage with me, is there's two things that I want folks to focus on before you tell me what role you want, what title you want, what, who got a promotion before you got a promotion. But there's two things. Decide what brings you joy. Define it, decide it, like know it. And it can change and more. I really think and evaluate what is the number one or two things that bring you joy in your life. And you're never too young to start that. Because again, I think it becomes a habit that you're always evaluating so that you can check yourself when something's not bringing you joy. Because when that doesn't happen, it becomes a snowball for everything else. The second thing that I will always encourage people to do is assess your budget and your finances. There is nothing worse than doing something that does not bring you joy, but you have no way out of it. That makes bad leaders. That makes bad employees and team members and friends and partners, because now what you're chasing is a thing to fix another thing that probably isn't bringing you joy.
Yeah, spirals.
And it's just this whole, so you think about it, you spend, I don't know, we spend the majority of our lives working and to be miserable and it not to be aligned at a thing, on a thing, with a thing that creates this snowball chase of, you got to do this to fix this, to fix this, to fix that, instead of like just taking a breath and saying, okay, doesn't matter that I'm this low or this title or that. Doesn't matter that I make this much or this much and live in this house and drive, you know, whatever it is, don't let equally what you do outpace what brings you happiness and what you can afford to do, because that then begins the tragedy. And so I always ask people to take a moment and tell me what brings you joy. They can tell me what job they want, but 9 times out of 10, just so the listeners and the watchers, you ain't going to get it right the first time, the second time. You're not going to have the answer. It's going to take you a minute, especially if you haven't been doing the work. And make sure you're saving enough, putting stuff away so you can make choices that are good for you and not because you're stuck in the doom loop or the matrix.
No, you don't want to get stuck in that. But no, those are really great coaching questions. So you said, what brings you joy? And then the second one was that around what your financial situation
just
is? Or
check,
like,
do a check. Financial health. Check. Just do a health check. Periodically have a vision. Make sure that you keep things in alignment and where they should be. Because otherwise, you're at the mercy of somebody else because you're trying to pay a bill, do a thing, and that's not fun. I mean, there's always going to be a bill. There's always going to be something.
Yeah.
But once it gets way out of balance, and on another conversation, I can tell you what, when you have your finances are in order and you have your little stash, I will tell you what that stash is called. There's a joke I have with my friends on what that stash is called, and it will make you change your whole perspective. But not for today. Another conversation.
Not for today. You're going to leave us hanging that? I feel like you have.
So that way you can invite me back. Like, and plus, I have to find out a professionally etiquette way to help you understand what that fund is called. So,
okay. So there's two reasons. One, to get us back, and two, so you get a better way to say it. A more professional way to say it.
Yeah, because I got a way to say it, and I think people are like, oh, God, that's it. I want to keep you on the air and keep your podcast going and do our
No, I appreciate that. I'm sure my listeners appreciate that even more, to keep me on the air.
Yeah.
But, Lori, it's been really great having you on the show and just sharing your experiences. I know that you kind of talked about it briefly when you're just sharing your story, that at one point you wanted to be a physician to help people, but then you found different ways to do that, whether that was in corporate and private equity, the nonprofit world, and what you're doing in as a business owner now, and really understanding what leadership looks like and empowering executive leaders, leaders in, whether it's in the nonprofit world, in the for-profit world, in Fortune 500, 100, 20, or 15 like yourself. You're doing incredible work. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you so much for the work that you're doing and just allowing me to be a part of your community. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I want to make sure people know how to stay connected with you, whether that's on socials or your website. How can people connect with you?
Yeah, I think the easiest way is LinkedIn, Lori Holt. That's a great way. And if you just want to check out and see what I'm doing and sneak around and, you know, figure out what my business is all about, it's Novell and Associates. So www.novell-associates.com. Just check in with me and I'll help you get wherever you need to get to.
Awesome. No, I appreciate you sharing that. For those of you watching, it should have been coming across the screen a few different times. So definitely rewind it if you didn't see it, or I don't know why I said rewind. Go back. And then if you're listening, you can see it in the show notes. But yes, thank you so much, Lori, for being on the show. I know we got connected really. We didn't get to talk about that, how we got connected from the Color Connect and the Colors of Her Success.
Right.
And I know you're also Maxwell Leadership Certified member as well. But I think what we did talk about wasn't foreign, but I think it's also foreign for the listeners to know the other stuff you're involved with too.
Thank you.
Okay. So for those of you listening or watching, first off, thank you for taking the time to listen and watch the whole way through. But I know you got something from Lori's story, just understanding what leadership looks like and understanding that sometimes imposter syndrome doesn't always look like what we think it looks like, and it may be something that you may be experiencing. I think one of the best ways to start is really acknowledging it and seeking out a community to help. So whether you have that community or not, I think either of us would be welcome if you reached out to us.
Absolutely.
And I kind of volunteered you, but I figured
you would say yes. I love it. Let's do it.
But I think it's conversations that definitely need to be had more. Maybe that's something I'll create a community around at some point when I have the bandwidth to do it. Definitely not right now. But for those of you who stuck around, I really appreciate the support. And as we are on this journey to become the most incredible version of ourselves by learning from each other, we're going to keep being incredible. Thanks for listening.
Be sure to rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We'll see you here next time. And be incredible.
Incredible.
Have you enjoyed listening to the Incredible Paul Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some Incredible Paul merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to incredipaul.org/merch. incredipaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your Incredible Paul look.